I know 10 minutes is not enough. They each have 10 minutes to help us take this information, this update, and really look at some of the things that we might be able to do both professionally and personally to make a difference. The next speaker is Dr. Stephanie Chalupka. She'll be talking about core action strategies for public health professionals to decrease contributions to climate change. Stephanie is a professor of nursing and director of the Master of Science in Public Health Nursing program at Worcester State College. I always stumble on that. She also holds an appointment as a visiting scientist in occupational and environmental health at the Harvard School of Public Health. Dr. Chalupka's research addresses environmental health issues arising in areas with a concentrated concentration on immigrant populations and older substandard housing. She was the recipient of the University of Massachusetts President's Award for Public Service for her work with refugee and immigrant populations. Dr. Chalupka is the author of over 50 publications in occupational and environmental health nursing, including the AAOHN Core Curriculum in Environmental Health. She has presented papers on environmental health at numerous national and international conferences and was the PI of a grant entitled Strengthening the Capacity of Public Health Nursing and Other Health Professionals, serving minority and low-income communities to better identify, manage, and prevent environmental health risks. Sorry. This project was funded by the US EPA. She is currently co-PI for US Healthy Homes for All, Improving Children's Health in Diverse Communities, which is funded by the US Department of Housing and Urban Development. Another friend and colleague, please welcome Dr. Stephanie Chalupka.
Well, I feel like now that you've had to listen to that bio, you should all be able to go home and get your CEUs. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming back again this year. Last year we had sort of an undesirable time at the end of a long day, and we had a great crowd, and you're all back again this year. And on behalf of the organizers, I'd like to thank you all. I'd also like to thank the wonderful speakers, enabling me to go through my 10 minutes in way less time now. clearly, from what you've heard already, the debate about whether global environmental change is real has certainly been superseded by an appreciation that climate change is not only occurring, but is actually taking place much more rapidly than anticipated. And you have also heard by this point that global climate change poses a really unprecedented challenge to human health, both as a direct threat and as a promoter of downstream risks. We had a great overview from Sarah in terms of what this is really going to look like in terms of our physical environment. And I would actually argue that we might consider global climate change as possibly the greatest public health challenge we've faced thus far. these images would convey to us the urgency of taking, of those of us as public health practitioners, public health nurses, of thinking about how we can be a part of the solution. I don't think it's overestimating the situation to say that unchecked, what we see could really lead to planetary destabilization. We've already seen some very troubling images, right? Those previous images were sub-Saharan Africa, you know, really troubling images of women standing in line for 6 hours to get their jerry cans filled with water. But this is right in the United States. And as Sarah very eloquently told us, the health effects of climate change are certainly going to be felt most acutely by children, the elderly, and the poor. Those are our most vulnerable populations. And Sarah actually also did a great, no, I think it's great. I always go over my allotted time because I always think of these great stories that I need to tell. And Sarah did a great job of telling us about the potential impacts and what it really is going to look like in terms of human health. We tend to think most commonly about the heat impacts, the heat stroke, risk of heat attributable cardiovascular and pulmonary morbidity and mortality, but also bringing in flooding and drought, the contributions of heat to air pollution, changes in the distribution of vector-borne and waterborne diseases and their transmission, and even threats to food production, and how global climate change can be the cause of civil conflict and environmental refugees, forced migration, and in addition to all of those physical health problems, also mental health problems. Public health nurses really need to think about ways that they can partner with other well, that's one solution. Public health nurses need to think about ways that we can partner with the larger public health community and even beyond public health providers to think about ways that we can face this challenge and to become more informed and to act as agents of change in our own community. Certainly, this is one strategy that y'all were able to read this cartoon, but we're here to say today that we actually have some more probably useful ways for you. John did a fabulous job of giving us an overview of the larger picture. The World Health Organization, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, and the CDC have fabulous resources for us. At the state level, this, of course, we featured California and their climate change portal, but my own state, Massachusetts, many of our states have started the effort, as Sarah indicated with her map. And even at the local municipal level, there's lots going on, lots of ways for us to be involved, ways that are specifically for nurses to start. Thinking about, I don't know how many of you in this room are familiar with ANNIE, the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. It's a great resource, this site. One of the great things about this site, besides the resources available, is it's collaborative. Of course, I have to plug my own site. This is the Harvard School of Public Health's collaboration with the BU School of Public Health. The Superfund research program has funded outreach to nurses for environmental health education. And if you look at this featured report here, this is a fully downloadable report with very detailed guidelines about what you can do when you go back from all, when you leave all this great enthusiasm and excitement and next week go back to the real world. How can you take what you've learned about in these few days, and how can you take this and start to make change? Liz Blackburn, Laura Andurko, myself, and several people have worked together to try to develop something with real concrete tools, ideas for action, and resources to support your action. So that's ehnursing.org. Finally, as we think about ways to take our new knowledge and enthusiasm and our renewed commitment to address this issue in our communities, think about things strategically, the way public health nurses always do think strategically. Who might our partners be? They might be healthcare institutions, environmental groups, elected officials, community groups, faith communities, even educational institutions. Just very briefly, for example here, this Climate Change Day of Prayer. I don't know how many of you are aware that October 24th was the International Day of Climate Change, and churches across the United States actually rang their bells 350 times. To signify the parts per billion believed to be the safe upper limit of CO2 in the atmosphere. My own church really did such an amazing job. We actually, we had climate change teach-ins. We distributed high efficiency light bulbs, and we did all sorts of really fun things. And it was a great way for the whole church family to come together to address this. And of course, this is, in terms of educational institutions, this is the Harvard Sustainability page, which actually has lots of resources for people in the community as well. In terms of concrete action strategies, I would refer you to the downloadable action guide that we've developed for you, but also just thinking about real concrete things that you can do. Sometimes we listen to what's going on at Copenhagen, and we think, or what will be going on, and think, how could we ever hope to impact something like that? Well, in our ways, we can, but we can start small. Start by thinking about planting trees in cities. Sarah had a great graphic that really makes my argument, and I was going to go speak a little bit about, you know, carbon dioxide sinks and removing CO2 during photosynthesis and the way they cool cities. We can think about things like eating less meat. Animal protein in wealthy, in Western industrialized countries and wealthy countries like ours is a big piece of our diet. And the principal sources of this animal protein are ruminants and monogastric animals that have a high environmental cost. Livestock production is highly resource intensive. 26% of the Earth's ice-free land is used for grazing so that we can have steak. 33% of all arable land is used for growing feed crops to feed this livestock. And vegetables and fruits are far less carbon intensive to produce than livestock, although some practices such as raising tomatoes in greenhouses or refrigerating carrots for months at a time, you know, certainly can increase the carbon footprint substantially. But lots of the action strategies that we can take actually have important co-health benefits. Things like smart land use and transportation for smart growth. We heard earlier in this panel about building walkable and bikeable cities. These things have important co-health benefits for our patients, because don't we see important health outcomes for people that eat less meat, eat less red meat, and bike and walk more? Certainly. We need to think about ways to engage our patients and our communities. We also need to think about being champions at work and in our communities. Actually try to get on agendas. Lil Mood, who's sitting in this audience here, is such an inspiration in terms of always telling us, get on the agenda and, you know, be a part of the conversation. Engage our professional organizations. Certainly the public health nursing section of APHA is engaged, but what about other nursing specialty organizations that we belong to? Is the Society of Pediatric Nurses, AWON, are we all engaged? And think about ways that we can link to state and national efforts. There's a lot going on, and John told us all of the things that are in progress now. Our legislators need to hear that we're interested in this, that we care, that we vote. And I just would close with some words from Barbara Sattler, who always encourages us to work at our highest level of discomfort. So last year at this session, Barbara asked people to raise their hands, and I'm going to do the same thing, if you don't mind, Barbara. How many of you here are involved in local efforts around climate change? Perfect. Those of you that put your hands up for local efforts, think about working at the state level. Work with your state nursing organization. Work with your state legislators. How many of you are working at the state level? Okay. And how many of you are working nationally? I challenge you all to kick it up a notch. And you're comfortable where you are, so say, when I go home from here, I'm going to find a way to impact the next level. In the end, climate change is clearly a very pressing public health concern. And the scope and complexity of this challenge is really unprecedented. We must all accept the challenge. And we need, as public health nurses, to demonstrate leadership through our own activities and through engaging collaboratively with other sectors outside of public health. We need to protect the future for our children, because the future is literally in our hands. Thank you very much.